He spent a decade selling a product that most of us know we need, but actually know very little about. The more he learned about the art of selling within the industry, the more turned off he actually became. That is, until he decided to become a disruptor. He's changed the game and written a book about it. His core belief is truth and transparency actually matter. My guest on Think Underground is financial services producer and co-founder of Kibono, educator and author of Fortune or Fiction, Why the Be Your Own Banker Concept is Flawed, Adam Nyman. Adam, welcome underground.
Thanks, man. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
This is Think Underground. Insightful and intelligent conversation with entrepreneurial giants, impact leaders, and titans. Coming up next on Think Underground.
I'm glad to have you here, and I've enjoyed the conversations that we've had leading up to today. And really, obviously, the catalyst behind, got to have you on here because I think yours is a message that will be well received. It'll make a few people uncomfortable probably about what everything they thought they knew until now. And I guess that's the point really of this series of podcasts that we have. So glad you're able to make yourself available, and I'm looking forward to learning from you today.
Yeah, thanks. Ditto.
So really, you're an insurance guy.
Try to keep it simple. There's a lot of different, and you know, title in Canada here, at least title protection is a big deal. Who can call themselves a financial planner, a financial advisor, a financial services rep? To be honest, a lot of that regulatory stuff, given how busy, you know, life can be, I don't kind of really pay attention to that stuff. But I note that title is a big thing because people call themselves planners when they may plan but don't have a certain designation. But nonetheless, yeah, I'd say financial advisor.
So we work in a pretty interesting industry. My background, as you know, also is in financial services, more in the mortgage investment side and mortgage services side. Definitely not a CFP myself, definitely not an insurance producer or a salesperson. But as you pointed out, and as we've talked about before, there's lots of people selling these services and these products to people who, quite rightly and understandably, went to school, college, trades, something for something different, right? Yeah. And got into a different line of work or profession where this information, as I mentioned really in the intro, is stuff we know we need to get advice on and stuff we know we need access to protect ourselves, our families, to set ourselves up for retirement or whatever it may be. But that whole education system that I sometimes pick on never really set us up to be well-versed and understand some of the most critical things that our lives eventually at some point depend on.
Yeah, the question is if we do decide that it is important for that same system to educate on those topics, whose education is it? You know, like you really got to dig deep. You know, look at right now, Canada and the U.S. health education is all the rage. Yes, I guess you can argue that the younger you are, statistically speaking, the less healthy you are. You know, obesity rates are through the roof, but health is a big thing. So there's a big difference between providing information and actually applying the information. You know, and that's why I think, you know, the internet, specifically YouTube, is such a wonderful thing because it is, in my opinion, like capitalism at its finest, right? The best people with the best information who provide the best value are going to drive results and get it to the top. You have the downside of that. You can also have people who can sell really well, but almost become cult leaders in a way and are just interested in themselves. But, you know, it's kind of a microcosm of history. You know, what's happening now on YouTube is kind of and Twitter is the old school public square. And who knows where it'll end up. But I do think in general, these sorts, podcasts, YouTube, building a personal brand, talking about what you're doing, the nuances, I think it's the way to go. And you're going to have to sift through the shit for a little while, but it's all part of the progress. And I think, and I hope in the long run, I genuinely believe that, you know, we'll all get to a better place from a business, education, transparency standpoint in the long run. It may be a bumpy road, but I think it's a force for good.
Yeah, I think we're at an interesting age, and who knows, you know, where the bookends on that interesting age are going to be. You know, there are those of us who would say, oh, people who think the way you and I might be borderline fanatics, might be borderline conspiracy theorists and stuff like that. But the reality is that the internet age, the information age, has brought us to a point where we have access to information like we never had before. Now, if you go back a few thousand years and you're talking about, you know, the Romans, et cetera, or the clerics or people who were of the religious cloth, they were the only literate ones. And the joke is kind of like George Bush sitting, reading to the nursery school kids with the book actually upside down. Yeah. It was kind of like the priests and the prophets and those of the religious or the clerics were holding the holy book in front of them while they spewed whatever political agenda they wanted their totally. People to know.
Yeah.
You know, so are we that much different 2,000 years later? Who knows?
Who knows? Who knows? I do think you're right about we're definitely overcorrecting, you know, but there's a reason why you overcorrect. It's because, you know, things swung way too far in the opposite direction. You know, the powers that be withhold information. Not all of them, right? And I don't think, you know, that saying, highway to hell is paved with good intentions. I don't think there's this cabal of people that are sitting there saying, trying to, you know, move the world in a certain direction. At least this is my belief. I don't think there's a cabal of people trying to move the world in a certain direction, trying to withhold certain information because their goal is to make all this money. And like, I'm a more chaos theory type of guy. You have a very complicated world with a lot of people with a lot of vested interests. And the reality is if I spent my life building a business and I made a lot of money from that, of course I would lobby and spend the money that I have to reinforce my own existence and push a buyout or get rid of competitors. And that's the job of government. The job of government is to actually try to keep things as fair as possible and not pick winners and losers. And I think what we've done a poor job, I think capitalism has done a good job on its own, but I think governments have done a poor job. And we are at a place now where winners and losers are being picked based on their ability to be influenced, which is why you have, you know, people that may be conspiratorial, you know, kind of are justified in a way, kind of are feel empowered to criticize and think outside the box because, you know, to an extent, a lot of things have been suppressed. And, you know, the more that's out there, the better it is.
So I'm going to tick somebody off with this, and maybe that's my goal. I don't know. But you mentioned earlier around the fact that if we were to alter the education system, the question would become who is going to be the one designing the curriculum or being the, you know, leading the education charge. And that's an interesting question because, and this is probably where I'm going to rub somebody the wrong way, but we have a series of educators in the current conventional education system, let's refer to it as the public or separate school system, where they've basically gone through the K to 12 scenario, then went off to college or university and got a teacher certificate, and then found themselves back in the K to 12 ecosystem. Whereas you come with a higher level of education. We're not necessarily hiring for junior or high grade 9 or senior year, grade 12, whatever it is. We're not necessarily hiring CFPs and people with certain designations, whereas you've got a decade, you've got higher learning, certification, licensing, as well as a decade of experience, and you're educating people who are basically at an adult age, you know, to some realities. You know, so let's talk about that, because really the system isn't set up for people to graduate their learning years, their conventional learning years, as informed as they could be.
Yeah. My big thing for people and my clients and the people that I deal with is there should definitely be to an extent, a do-it-yourself approach in life. Now, ideally you get to the point in life that you can do it yourself to an extent, but it's just not worth your time anymore. You know, I'm sure Jeff Bezos knows how to build a pretty good shelf. I'm sure he's pretty handy or with programming. I'm sure he started Amazon from scratch, right? I think he knows a lot about mail and a lot about UPS system. But I don't think he mails any packages anymore, even though he knows how to and probably can. You want to kind of understand why things are the way they are and try to do it yourself initially, just so you can understand it, so you're not afraid of it. And then as you understand more and as you get busier and ideally wealthier, you hand that off to people, but with at least a basic understanding. I think too often, especially with money, people just shy away from it for so long. They get older. The economy moves away from them. 20, 30 years down the road, you have this pile of money. You don't know what to do with it. You don't understand the stock market. You don't understand how anything really works. And you attach yourself to it emotionally and hire a financial advisor. And it's stressful because if you don't understand something, chances are you're not going to feel good about what's going on with it, whether it's a good or a bad. If things are going well, then you kind of feel like you have no control over things. And if things go poorly, you get angry because you don't understand what's going on. And I think that's the worst thing. I think the worst thing is to live your entire life feeling like the world's getting away from you. Early before we started recording, you were mentioning how, you know, 50, but still being able to do some tech stuff. Like ideally I still kind of understand what's going on in the world when I'm 80 or 90. Look at guys like Warren Buffett and Charlie Munger. They may not be able to do what you and me can do with computers, but they definitely understand the fundamentals economically. They definitely understand the value economically, and they're tuned in as anybody else is.
So the let's go with a dangerous word to use, but I use it once in a while. The average person, the non-specialist, let's refer to them as that. As you said, they've gone through a period of life, their professional career, whatever it may be, 10, 20, 30 years later, they're sitting on this pile of cash, as you're talking about, and they're not exactly sure what to do. The term scarcity mentality comes to my mind, right? The term scarcity is am I going to hoard it and hang on to it because I'm going to defy the odds, and I've read all the books and I've heard what everybody said. You cannot save your way to wealth, but I'm afraid of losing it because I might make a bad move. And really that's the question, right? Or what? So who am I trusting with my wealth, with what I spent decades striving towards so that I can have, so that I can have a retirement that may not be lavish, but at least I know I'm safe and secure. So those are the types of words that probably come to mind. You're speaking with these people, and you actually made it your mission and your purpose to, I don't want to say defy, but you're exposing, you're bringing truth, and you're bringing to light the transparency of many of the things that you learned about the wonderful world of capitalism and about the fact that information was probably heavily guarded. Why? So that those who had the monopoly on a formula or on a strategy could make an exorbitant amount of wealth. And what else? What else do we want to let people know?
Yeah, I don't think it's that. I think it's more just, like, I don't think there's a conspiracy there. It's just, you know, highway to hell being paved with good intentions. And the ebook I wrote is basically, you know, summarizing what I believe is just an over pitched and oversold product in the marketplace, which is, you know, investment grade life insurance. And I think too often people, I think the majority of the financial services industry, you know, cares a lot. Listen, people need to make money. So if there's an opportunity for someone to make a lot of money selling a product that they're told is good and safe and will help someone in their time of need, checks all these boxes, and you make a bunch of money, it's an easy sell. I try to dig a little bit deeper. You mentioned something interesting, and you know, someone worked their entire life to have this pile of money. They want something safe and secure. I think my whole pitch and my whole vision behind the world is that there's no such thing as safe. There's no such thing as secure. History is being written, you know, as we live with what's going on with debt and money and finance. And this goes back to kind of what I mentioned in the book with regards to how these products are pitched and illustrated. A lot of assumptions are being made. And I don't think anyone could go back 20 years and really could adequately predict where things are economically now. And I don't think you could go 20, 30, 40, 50 years out and adequately predict where things will be. I'm predicting just things that are genuinely bigger and better and more complicated. And the highs will be higher, the lows will be higher as well, but nonetheless, there will be highs and lows. But this idea of security and safety, I don't know what that means anymore when the US government could basically call up all the banks on June 5th and say, we're not paying you what we're supposed to be paying you. And then the dominoes all fall down from there. Like everything is, we're a massive house of cards, and we've always been a massive house of cards. But I think, you know, you were mentioning how people have money. They've read all the books. I think that's the starting point, actually. I think most people haven't. We're so busy. Life is so expensive. You wake up in the morning, got to get the kids going. Then you get to work, got to deal with them in the evening. Like, how much time at the end of the day do you really have to yourself to sit down and read a book and educate yourself? Now, you can say, look at these hustle gurus online and say, oh, you should break your day up into like 6-hour days. And listen, I understand what people should do, of course, but applying that practically is hard. You know, people are tight for time, but I think that would be kind of step one, maybe reading some books. Listen, YouTube is just a wealth of knowledge and information, and just staying on top of what's happening in the world. I know people don't like to watch the news. People stay away from it, but I think it's important to keep tabs on to an extent. You don't want to watch too much of it because it could consume you and you could think that the world's in a terrible place. But also you can't stick your head in the ground because 10 to 20 years will pass and you will feel extremely uncomfortable because you have no idea what's going on. So it's a balance of kind of staying just enough informed that you feel like you're making progress in your life. You know, you have to have the blinders on. You know this in business. You got to have the blinders on to an extent, because if you pay too much attention to the noise, you're going to easily be sidetracked. But at the same time, you have competitors. You have people doing things that you're doing. You want to differentiate yourself. So you need to be aware as well. It's a hard balance to follow. You know, I don't know if I have it personally, but, you know, that's, I guess, the goal in life, trying to figure that out.
And that is the goal in life. And people are trying to figure it out. If you look at some of the trends over the last few years, certainly some that have been a spotlight's been shone on them during COVID, you know, the whole idea of the gig economy and the side hustle and people who are stepping away from their, you know, tenured careers or their longer careers, you know, as commuters going into an office. You know, you sort of picture it like come down the elevator from the condo down to the parking garage, go down on the highway, drive for an hour and a half to go back up the elevator to sit at a desk.
Right.
That you could have sat in your own condo or your own home. It doesn't make sense. And people are starting to realize that. They're also realizing that it takes me more dollars to buy the same product or the same dollars to buy a product that suddenly looks a lot smaller than it used to a couple of years ago. Yeah. So whether it's inflation or shrinkflation or greedflation or whatever it's been called, people are suddenly, I think I've noticed, a little bit more frequently a little bit more uncomfortable with the status quo, and they are looking for something different. Hence the idea that people are looking at Bitcoin and cryptocurrency and NFTs. I know of a couple people who've made it really big, and I don't know what's happened since, but people are definitely looking at something different because they realize what their parents did or their grandparents did. It doesn't work today. Maybe it did or didn't work for them. It might have just worked differently. But as you said, we're busier. We're carrying high-speed internet. We're not carrying beepers. We're actually carrying smartphones. We're a lot more connected, which means we actually have a lot less time to ourselves, a lot less privacy. And you're absolutely right. We're busier. We're more tired. And we haven't put the blinders on necessarily as much as we could to take time for ourselves. Yeah. So you're now doing something different, though, in this space that you're talking about. We're talking about insurance space. We're talking about security. We're talking about protection. But you've decided to change it up, and you are doing something, I don't want to say a little different. You're doing something dramatically different, I think, and share it.
Well, I appreciate you characterizing it that way. I don't think it's that different, but it's the same, and I'm trying to put my own personal spin on it. So just like a lot of other financial services guys, specifically in Canada and women, obviously, I can manage people's investments. I don't do that anymore. I can't be everything to everybody. It's really hard managing people's money and also managing people's emotions. So I kind of stopped doing that altogether. I still have a little bit left, but I do mainly personal insurance, life, disability, critical illness insurance on the personal side. So if someone calls me up, they're getting a mortgage or they're interested in a life insurance policy, I speak to them on the personal side of things. And then I also sell group insurance to businesses. So if you're a small company, as you guys are, wanted a health plan, set that up. So on the personal side of things, and I'm sure you see advertisements online. If you've ever searched life insurance in Google, Facebook starts to blow up, protecting your family and what are they going to do if you die? And, you know, I remember early in my career, there were sales guys that I worked with who would have like coffins on their keychains and they'd put it on the table. I never was able to sell like that. And I've always had trouble advertising myself because the best way to advertise yourself is just doing shit like this, just advertising yourself. But I was never one to talk about, oh, you need life insurance because, you know, what is your family going to do if you die? And like, that's, of course, that's true, but car companies don't advertise their car by saying, how are you going to get to work in the morning? It's just, that's not how it works. They advertise like a lifestyle or a feel or a practicality. You know, you buy a Ferrari because you're in a certain class of individual. You buy a Civic because you want something specific. I know wealthy people who drive Civics, right? I'm not begrudging anything, but at the end of the day, it's not about getting to work in the morning. It's a tool to use in life. And depending on where you're at in life and what tool you want to use, this is kind of what it's for. And that's how I approached the personal side of things. I bought a book of insurance business when I started out 10 or 15 years ago. And there was a lot of investment policies that were sold back in the 70s and 80s that I deal with that don't look anything like what they were supposed to look like, you know, 30, 40 years later. And I feel like my industry is kind of doing it all over again. What was, and you can, you know, read the book, download it from my other website, what the vanishing premiums were in the 70s, 80s, 90s is the be your own banking strategy of today. And I'm not saying that these are necessarily bad products or bad policies. I'm just saying that there is another side to this coin and we shouldn't just kind of believe in these concepts the same way that we would have believed in them 10, 20 or 30 years ago, simply because we're not given enough with regards to how these are structured. So on the personal side of things, instead of advertising as myself as what are you going to do if you die? My whole twist is to kind of write an ebook and explain a specific concept that I believe is being overly represented in the marketplace, the way I see it. And that kind of allows me to market myself in different ways. You know, I'm talking about a concept rather than selling life insurance. But invariably, if people are looking into the product and or the concept, it is a life insurance discussion. And, you know, that would get me a client. And rather than having a discussion with someone who is saying, I don't know if I need life insurance or my spouse will be fine, I don't want to have those discussions because I'm not here to convince people that the product's valuable or that they need something. I want to deal with people who definitely want something. They're in the buying mood, but there's all this information out there and I'm trying to sift through it. And this spoke to me. So that's kind of my fortune or fiction book. And then on the group side of things, group benefits are an interesting product because, you know, a lot of people don't realize that all group benefits are is a tax-free reimbursement of medical expenses. So a lot of people go to insurance companies to get group benefits plans. But as part of that insurance package, in addition to having life and disability and some travel insurance and hospital insurance, they have, you know, a drug card, they have dental, they have vision, physio, chiro. Now, we need insurance companies to provide protection, but, you know, the risk associated with, you know, dying and getting disabled has nothing to do with me going to get a massage, me going to get my teeth cleaned, me going to get glasses. And why insurance companies are meddling in these routine transactions that have no basis in insurance, you know, that's really the question we should be asking. So what I've built is a direct-to-consumer platform to create healthcare spending accounts. Now, a lot of people know what healthcare spending accounts are, and traditionally, they've kind of been an add-on, right? So let's say you've maxed out, your employees have maxed out their dental, they've maxed out their physio, or they spent the $200 on the vision already, and they need another pair of glasses. Here, you can give them an additional $1,000 a year. Any medical expense that's eligible, they can run through that account. They get reimbursed tax-free. I say that health spending accounts are the only form of benefits. If you want insurance, take the insurance and let the insurance companies deal with the insurance. But anything that's not insurance, dentistry, physio, chiro, glasses, do that on your own. go direct in a way. So what my platform is just a portal where a business owner can create and fund their own account. There's no middleman. There's a management fee, of course, that goes right to us for creating and managing the platform. But it's effectively cutting out the middleman of transactions that I don't believe they should be involved in, which is advisors and insurance companies being in the middle of routine healthcare transactions. You know, if you have a business or if you're looking into group benefits, you'll see something in your package called an incurred loss ratio, which is basically about 75 to 80%. What that means is that for every dollar you give a Manulife or a Sun Life, in order for your premiums to remain stable, no more than 75 to 80 cents on that dollar need to go back to your employees. So, of course, people should get paid for the work that they do. And, you know, the broker is going to make 10%. The insurance company is going to make 10 to 15%. And that makes sense. But why? Why are insurance companies and brokers making 25% of my dental bill, 25% of my physio, 25% of my chiro for processing a transaction, processing just a transaction that's tax-free? You know, our payroll providers, they don't get a percentage of your payroll. You know, they charge a fair price for service. Now, it may be a percentage up to a certain point, then past a certain point, it's a flat fee. I think my payroll provider is like $3 a month per employee, you know, whatever it is. I can't remember specifically, but it makes sense. It's fair. I can go compare that into the marketplace. A lot harder to do with group insurance. But basically, that's kind of the goal with regards to what I do, is kind of challenging the status quo, getting people to kind of question what they know and think about things differently. And it's, listen, my goal is to obviously sell my product, but at the end of the day, every meeting I'm trying to kind of, in a way, yeah, I don't want to be self-righteous about this. I'm trying to teach people, give people what I believe to be the truth. I'm biased. I definitely don't have all the answers here. But nonetheless, this is the way that I see things after being involved in the business for 10 or 15 years. And if I could go back, and if I was the owner of your company, or if I was, you know, if I were you, if I had this amount of money, knowing what I know, this is how I would structure things.
So I'm fascinated by this. I love it, because the thing that excites me is studying human behavior, studying conditioning, studying, I don't want to call it propaganda, but good marketing techniques, for example. And I'm listening to you speak, and you made a distinction between insurance and healthcare. And I think that we as people, humans, probably blur some lines, not through any fault of our own.
In Canada.
Yeah. Okay. So not necessarily through a fault, but just a lack of awareness. I don't want to call it laziness, but we didn't dive deep into it to learn that we just think it's synonymous, right? So you made a distinction between insurance and healthcare. You also made the distinction, not necessarily linearly, but insurance, healthcare, and benefits. And when you look at the industry, we've sort of, whether we're convenience driven, laziness driven, lack of knowledge driven, whatever it may be,
a little bit of everything.
I have to remember that a large employer or a small business owner, as a smaller employer or an individual, we're all just human beings. And some of us have decided to study something a little bit harder. But whether we're an employer or a sole proprietor, we are consuming this information that has become generally accepted terminology. And so we have conditioned ourselves generationally to accept that as one and the same. And you're making that distinction. And as I'm listening to the industry, I heard you say there was nothing nefarious going on. Nobody was trying to be a conspiracy theorist, but in a world of capitalism, an industry that's already providing a similar service has chosen to extend the breadth of the service that they're providing. And there's an opportunity to charge a convenience fee of 25% for offering that service.
Yeah, totally, totally. And I think too often, listen, everyone's trying to make money here, right? So if someone wants to, if I'm a group benefits advisor and I get a call from somebody, and they say, I have 10 people. I've been promising group benefits for years. I just want to get something simple. I kind of know what it's going to cost. If you can keep it around $2,000 a month, thank you. Put together a conventional package. And they just do it. And like, of course they do it, because in the same way, if I walk into you know, when I needed my car and I walked into the dealership, I'm like, listen, I know this is what I want. This is what I'm ready to spend. Set me up with the car. They didn't sit down and ask me, well, why? Why do you need a car? But it's obvious why I need a car. But when it comes to benefits, very often I do, you know, if someone will come to me and say, listen, I need a benefits plan, my question will be kind of why, you know, what is it for? And I think it's easy to know why we need cars. It's harder to understand why we need benefits. Now, I know why employees want benefits. At the end of the day, employees want to be paid more. It's part of a total compensation package, right? Yep. So, you know, my salary is 100K. I have a great plan with Manulife and Sun Life, and I know those, whatever those premiums are, doesn't matter to me because me, my wife, and my kids, we can go to the dentist, have a little bit of life insurance, a little bit of disability insurance. Fine. You know, the ortho's not covered. I have to pay a few bucks out of my pocket every year, but I've gotten a massage, two massages this year, gone to the dentist 3 times with all the kids, drugs covered, don't have to worry about getting travel insurance when I travel. It's a great addition, you know, so I understand it. I understand it. But I think it's important to differentiate between what insurance is and what the benefit is. You know, benefit is anything above and beyond what your normal, you know, salaried income is. But specifically with regards to benefits plans, the reason why they're so beneficial, at least in all of Canadian provinces other than Quebec, is because they're not taxable. So if your employer pays you $1,000 bonus and you're making 100K a year, $400 of that $1,000 bonus is going to the CRA. So you're left with 600. However, if you spend $1,000 at the dentist and you make a claim online between you, your wife, and your kids, and I'm only saying wife because of my wife and kids, and you spend $1,000, you're getting that full $1,000. That premium that your business owner paid to the insurance company is tax deductible, just like your salary is. But the $1,000 that you receive is totally tax-free. So it's effectively $400 in savings right there. So that's really why benefit plans are incredible for employees. And as taxes go up, you know, as people make more money, they pay more in tax. Saving 50 cents on the dollar for your medical needs is extremely important. But I think it's important to differentiate between routine healthcare and catastrophic care. And I don't think we do a good enough job at that in Canada when we're discussing our medical system. It's almost like all or none.
Before we get into the catastrophic side of things and really the insurance side of things, I think it is an important thing to highlight, a distinction to make to those who might be listening who are business owners, entrepreneurs in their own right. Looking at this, I don't think we can underestimate that value, though, the value or the currency of the group benefit or the health spending account, as you're talking about, as a benefit. And I want to talk about a couple of things. You've talked about, actually, you've touched on, you know, Canada revenue and tax code a couple of times. And again, you're not an accountant and you're not giving tax advice. No. However, it is a fact. It is a fact that this is a tax writable expense to the business owner or to the business itself. And it is a tax-free benefit to the beneficiary of the policy.
The routine stuff. Exactly.
Okay. So this is important to make a distinction on. And the reason why is we've just gone through a significant period of time where there was a massive competition underway nationally for employers to be able to attract top talent. And dollar for dollar, if you're matching salaries, there had to be a differentiator. And certainly a different differentiator has been the ability to work remotely or the ability for some to work from home, the ability for therefore an employer, if the criteria matched, to be able to actually recruit talent outside of a conventional geographic boundary because you've been able to work remotely.
Right, yeah.
But these are all significant things. So the ability for an employee to work from home actually is a raise because you're no longer incurring the expense of the commute. Yeah. Whether that's time, whether that's wear and tear on the vehicle, whether that's insurance related, you may or may not need a car anymore, those types of things. So there's definitely a benefit to that. And that there's a monetary value to that. There's a
monetary, yeah.
So lots of things to think about here from this perspective. It has been a great recruiting tool, or could be a great recruiting tool, to say that you're offering a benefit.
It's not even that it's a recruiting tool. It's that your competitors offer benefits, and like, it's kind of the thing that you kind of have to do.
Okay, so let's take that then switch gears a little bit. It used to be those who offered a benefit, that was a perk. Now, if you don't offer the benefit, you're not on a playing field anymore.
Yeah, exactly. It doesn't have to be, listen, people aren't necessary, because people don't understand it, they don't know the nuances, but it's kind of just like a box. Once you're a certain size, it's a box you need to check. Because if you're small enough, you can get away with salary increases for everyone for a while. But if you're looking to scale a company, let's say, or maintain a company, maintain talent when you're 20, 30, 40 people, it's 100% a box you need to check.
Fantastic.
Because if you are taking talent from elsewhere, they're going to be like, do you offer benefits? It's just going to be what they offer. And what are you going to do? You're going to argue with them? Well, we don't offer benefits because technically it's just a tax thing and not something we really believe in. It's not, we'll pay you more for it, but it's just.
So this is on par with, we used to see people competing for jobs and positions where a pension was offered.
Well, yeah, that hardly happens anymore.
Yeah. I mean, if you're in government services, maybe, and you're not under contract, or if you're in an organized labor type of environment, absolutely. But so now, is this something that will continue to evolve and change? And what you're doing, are you the Lone Ranger doing this, or is this becoming a shift as well?
It's definitely becoming a shift. I think there are other companies out there who are doing what I'm doing. Listen, insurance companies provide healthcare spending accounts. You know, advisors, I could set up Manulife's or Sun Life's healthcare spending account. The only difference is that I built my product both thinking about myself as an employee and myself as an employer with an understanding of the industry as a whole. I just tried to make it as simple as possible, and I wanted to build something I wanted to use. You know, our first version one of the product, wasn't actually designed to be sold. It was just something, how would I build it if I wanted to use it, you know, what would I want it to look like? How easy do I want it to be to add people, remove people, move from my employer view to back to my employee view, which other companies kind of have do to same extent. I feel like we do it better. I should feel like we do it better just because, you know, but nonetheless, I just built it from my own belief system, and it worked just enough that I was able to sell it. It got to the point where, because it was so manual, from the banking side of things, we had to kind of shut it down and rebuild it once we got to a certain size. But nonetheless, I've built it kind of with my own needs in mind. And those are the needs of small businesses specifically. And I say small business because those are the ones who are the most likely to have bad experiences with traditional benefit plans arrangements.
Interesting. Okay. They're not of the size and scale where they might get a dedicated underwriter or producer or something like that, or what?
No, maybe that could be part of it, but it's mainly how these products are structured. So, you know, a good example is the plan I was working with this morning. Families paying, the family premium is about $500 a month, so $6,000 a year. But if you're a family of four under that plan, each person can spend $1,500 a year at the dentist, right? $1,500 a year, that's $6,000. And then they can spend $500 a year on a list of 10 practitioners. Five, that's 5,000. Four of them can do it, that's 20,000. 26,000 right there. Then you have vision. Then you have drug, right? Then you have some medical services and equipment. So if you're a group of 10 people and you hire someone who has, you know, two kids, three kids, you're giving the insurance company $6,000 a year, but you're giving that employee the opportunity to spend $26,000 a year against the plan. And if and when they spend, now I'm not going to say they're not going to spend $26,000 a year, but it's easy for them to spend more than the premium paid. And the insurance company is going to increase your rates in the next year. Now, if you're a company of, you know, my wife works for a very large company with like 10,000 employees. Listen, if you hire a family with 10 kids and they start claiming the plan like crazy, there's just so many people on that plan, you know, an RBC or CIBC isn't going to notice it. You know, there's a cost of providing the benefits that's X percentage, and they increase that every year with inflation, and that's just baked into the cake for them. But if you're a business of 5 to 10 people and you are used to spending $1,000, $1,500 a month, and now it's getting to $2,000 a month, $2,500 a month, $3,000 a month, it's just like, oh, and it doesn't stop. It's incessant. And the reason why it's incessant is because everybody on the plan can spend more against the plan than the premium paid. And we're not talking about insurance services. We're not talking about premiums going up because someone got sick, or God forbid, someone died or got disabled. They're going up because the insurance company is giving your employees the opportunity to spend more and more of the premium, significantly higher than the premium. So it's constantly going up, and it's hard for small business that, you know, if your premiums went from $1,500 a year to, you know, $4,000, $1,500 a month, to $2,000 to $4,000 a month, that's $2,000 a year that is, you're probably taking from your salary or is your car payment or the difference between, you know, private school. You know, there's a lot of small businesses out there that will never scale, that will not grow, that this is what we're making and fine, we'll make a little bit more, but it gives me the living I want to give. And having something that you have no control over, that you budgeted, that is getting out of hand, it just doesn't work for you. And you need something different. And that's who I'm appealing to. And my pitch, I'm not saying you're saving money. If you want better benefits, spend more. If you want worse benefits, spend less. I see there's a company, one of my competitors to an extent, advertises quality employee benefits at a fraction of the cost. Hmm. You could only advertise the financial services this way. Imagine someone offering a Porsche, a Ferrari at a fraction of the cost. You'd be like, well, it's not a fucking Ferrari. Like, or it's a Ferrari kit and I have to build it myself. Or it's just the outsides, right? You know, it would be bullshit.
Or it's been in an accident and the crumple zone's gone or something.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, you know, it's too good to be true. But with benefits, it's so misunderstood. You can advertise. You can be like, oh, quality benefits at a fraction of the cost. Yeah, I'm paying a lot right now. I would love to pay a fraction of what I'm paying for. It's not that simple. What I tell people is, I'm not here to necessarily save you money. If you want to save money, I can. You offer less to your employees. If you want to spend more, spend more. But that should be up to you. It shouldn't be up to the insurance company. If you want to give your employees $5,000 a year each to spend on their medical expenses, great. Budget for that. But don't let an insurance company tell your employees how much of your money they can spend for them to send you the bill at the end of the year. And the reality is, once you provide something, it's really hard to take it away.
Really? Yeah, I'm just going to go there. Absolutely. Yeah.
It's really hard to take it away. And the insurance companies know that, you know? Now, they're not sitting there trying to, like, screw people over. This is just, like, an industry that's been around for a long time. And the reality is, if you go to the insurance company and your advisor and you want to save money, you know, they can save you money. It's really easy to cut down coverages in certain areas and get a premium down to what it was. But as much cutting up as you do, unless you fix that problem of claiming more against the plan than the premium paid, which shouldn't be a thing, until you fix that, you're not going to actually change the experience that you're having with regards to your plan on an annual basis.
And a quick heads up, I think, because there is a very fine line between direct to consumer or the person who is the consumer and the small business owner who really is a consumer unless they're at work.
Yeah.
In terms of level of understanding, right?
I'm like B2B/C, you know, I guess. Well,
and that's just it. And when you look at the law, and certainly the laws of this land, the way that they protect the consumer, they will protect the consumer from predatory practices. They'll refer to fiduciary responsibility. The one who has the knowledge is expected to act in a certain manner, look out for the rights and knowledge and education of the consumer. But the moment that same company, and again, I don't want to paint a picture that anybody's working in a duplicitous fashion, but the moment that it's a business offering a business, a group benefits or an insurance package to their employees, that level of responsibility now becomes buyer beware to the business owner, to the small business owner, to understand what they are buying into.
Yeah, there's definitely less controls in place on a business-to-business perspective. But I also think, listen, the banks, you know, help the government write the laws that, of course, help people, but reinforce their existence. And the insurance companies do the same thing. And one thing, they're not duplicitous. The reality is these are the people with the knowledge. Yep. So, and the politicians, most of them, they won't have the knowledge. And they rely upon these people who've been around for a long time. But the problem is there are duplicitous things that go on. Like, here's a good example. Tied selling is illegal. So if you go to a bank and you get a mortgage, they can't say to you, cool, but Arif, you need to open a TFSA and get a credit card with us. Otherwise, we're not giving you the mortgage. Like, now, they can say, hey, by the way, as a bonus offer, here's some other products that we offer. Let us know which one you'd like. But they can't make it a condition of the sale. Ironically, in group benefits, which is on insurance under a different act altogether, not the Banking Act, Insurance Companies Act, they can effectively tied sell insurance. So if you call an insurance company and you say to them, I want a dental plan, they're going to be like, okay, they'll give you a group benefits package and you have to get life insurance and accidental death insurance. Now, that's slowly changing just because the market is commanding certain things. You know, if a lot of people say, I just want a dental plan, I don't want this stuff, eventually the providers are going to be like, fine, just we'll give you what you want. But at the end of the day, I'm not saying tied selling should be illegal or shouldn't be illegal. I'm just saying it's kind of interesting how, on the one hand, it's acknowledged that this shouldn't be the case with consumers. But then when it comes to business owners, tied selling is completely okay to an extent. You know, so I can't just help sometimes the conspiracy theorist in me kind of, you know, pops up a little bit.
Well, I'm going to put a little plug in there as a licensed mortgage broker. I can advise that there is a bank whose color is in the red spectrum that does sell mortgages. And while tied selling is illegal, they make sure that I cannot close a deal because it is their policy that even though you'll sign a set of documents with me, that have to be vetted and I have to put my life on the line and my Arizona emissions insurance on the line that I did my job right. And then another set of documents will be signed with the lawyer for the client. Same, almost identical documents, at least a portion of them are almost identical. The deal will not close unless the client then has a one-to-one in-branch meeting with a closing specialist in the branch who wants to welcome them to the family.
Yeah.
At which point, by the way, a whole
they
bunch
have to of accept or decline insurance. Yeah.
Tied selling with a credit card or a TFSA or another form of a transaction is very strongly recommended with you. And that's how they're upselling. So it's not directly tied selling, but right. Sure enough, there's some very skilled salespeople involved.
Well, that's funny you mentioned that because I think there's a big difference between the way we want things to work and the way things actually work. And I think politicians sometimes make that mistake. You know, the idea that you can pass laws and make these arbitrary rules and people are just going to kind of like abide by them and not find a nuanced way to package it up differently is kind of ridiculous. And it turns into a situation with whack-a-mole. More pops up, sort of whack it down. And then 10, 15, 20 years later, you have bills that are so complicated, no one can actually read them before they're passed. And all these laws on the books that probably no one actually follows just because they're not practical.
Absolutely. And you are right. In fairness, as a recovering politician, we are not expected. We don't walk around with our resume, our CV. We don't knock doors and campaign with our history. It is a marketing game, and it's a game of charisma, and it's a game of popularity, and it's a game of who resonates at the door with the electorate and all sorts of things. And trust is something in terms of the image and the character of the individual who's campaigning. But at the end of the day, the one who is elected by the people to be their representative is not necessarily the best person for the portfolio or the job from a skills or experience perspective. And we are surrounded by either staffers. We're surrounded by staffers who have that knowledge and who are hired for that knowledge. And they basically, I remember saying, listen, I've got to tolerate you for the next 4 years until the election shows up. But I've been here for 27 years and I'm going to outlive you because I'm in this position and I'm the expert. Right. There's also a lobbyists who specifically are not politicians. They don't want to be politicians. They want to be working the marionette strings, guiding and influencing policy, et cetera.
And you need them as well because you need people who understand things, the nuances of a business to guide policy as well. It's complicated because you have too many of it, then too much, then you don't know if the policies are actually reasonable. Like, then you question whether or not the policies are there to actually provide the best value or to reinforce the existence of the major players. But then again, you need the input of major players because they're the ones with the knowledge and the information and understanding. So that's why I think you really need like critical thinkers and open-minded people in politics. And it's, but the reality is, if you're that critical of a thinker and that open-minded and entrepreneurial, probably the last place you'll end up because of how hard of an environment it is to be successful. And let's be honest, it's not like, listen, in the private sector, you can just make a lot more money. It's just the reality.
So one of the things that comes to mind as we're having this conversation, we always hear the saying that, you know, larger ships, they take more time to turn, they're less agile. But we are living in an age where we are, as individuals, expected to be, those words, agile, to innovate, to apply new thinking, to think outside the box, to be able to pivot. And many of us, in order to keep our roof over our heads, maybe our industry, because of COVID or things that happened, maybe there was no more longevity in that industry. Maybe we were forced to pivot and reinvent ourselves, or maybe really reinventing ourselves is the new hip thing to do. As you talked about personal brand, it's not so much what company you work for, but personal brand is becoming more and more prevalent. And I think rightly so. People want to do business with people they trust, respect, can count on. Interestingly, the term broker comes to mind. I didn't want to be a broker in financial services necessarily, but a natural skill set that I had was finding people with a need and finding people with the ability to satisfy that need and putting them together.
Yeah.
It just so happens to be called the broker of relationships. But for what you're doing and the service that you're providing, and really the differentiator or the value proposition really is to that smaller business owner, small to medium sized business is what I'm hearing. Those of us who are expected or realizing we need to be agile in order to compete, in order to remain relevant, in order to attract, in order to not become irrelevant, you know, whichever way you want to look at it. The ideal client for you and somebody who wants to reach out and learn more, obviously, I know you've mentioned, have a read, download the ebook, Fortune or Fiction, Why Be Your Own Banker, Concept is Flawed. But once they've read that, and maybe it's not a caveat to speaking with you, but it's certainly not a bad idea, what do they expect when they're talking with you? You're going to get to know them and
put myself in, I do my best to put myself in their shoes. Simple as that. Knowing what I know, if I were you, how would I do things? You know, maybe not now, or maybe over the course of a few months or a few years, but basically do what I can to put myself in someone else's shoes. You know, that's the goal with regards to what I do. You know, I try to get, sometimes people are taken aback, but I'll collect data really quickly. Like, what do you make? What's your house worth? What are your investments? You know, if it's on the investment or insurance side of things, if it's with Kibono, I'll ask, but if you have benefits, kind of let me look at it. What does it look like? Why did you choose this? You know, where are the limits? What are your problems? What do you like about it? You know, what's working for you? What's not working for you? So I try to get all the data as quick as I can, because once you have the data, then you start talking about it and see where the conversation goes.
So if you had one opportunity to change the world, what would you do?
Oh my God. I don't trust myself that much. That's a weird question. Oh man, that's weird. I don't know. Fine. One opportunity to change the world, gold standard.
I love it. Adam Nyman, co-founder of Kibono, I want to thank you for sharing your time with me. Thank you for adding some perspective, speaking to people who I believe are this growing part of our demographic or our society, that growing group of people who are deciding that what worked yesterday isn't working today and isn't going to work for tomorrow. And we need to take some things into our own hands and take some accountability, be responsible for our own futures and learn more and get hold of better information and vet that better information. You've been a source of that for us. They can find you at
Kibono.ca is a website. FortuneOrFiction.ca is the other website for the personal insurance side of things. And then you can send me an email, adam@kibono.ca.
Adam Nyman, thanks for joining us. Think Underground.
Think Underground is a Siva Creative Incorporated production, written and hosted by Arif Khan, produced by Brett Glover, with production assistance by Samantha Bowman, Cody Fitzgerald, William Gibson. Music courtesy 1M1 Music, directed by Arif Khan. Executive producers Mallory Steele and Arif Khan. Created by Mallory Steele.